From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Senator Hillary Clinton may be the first female candidate with both the money and momentum to run a full-tilt presidential campaign. The senator's campaign echoes efforts by a congresswoman from New York, Geraldine Ferraro. Ferraro served 3 terms in the U.S. House before her big break 2 decades ago. Democratic presidential nominee Walter Mondale picked her to be his running mate in 1984. Ronald Reagan won the re-election by a landslide, but Ferraro broke ground as the first woman ever named to a major party ticket. Today is International Women's Day, and continuing our Leading Ladies series, NPR's Tony Cox spoke with former vice presidential nominee Geraldine Ferraro about her pioneering career.
Polls show that in your run on the 1984 ticket, a majority of women voters voted against you. How did you react to the thought that women were not supporting you, a woman, back then for that office?
I've always said that with Ronald Reagan, he was so popular that I think if God had been in the vice presidential spot, even she would not have been able to pull it off. I mean, it was amazing. People loved him. I had a cousin who was in a hospital in Pittsburgh, and I went to see him when this was going on. My cousin subsequently died. He was very close to me. But I stopped in there. It was during the election, the campaign, and he said to me, "Oh, Jerry," he said, "I really wish you were running with Ronald Reagan." And I said, "I don't care about this, Fred, but you better make sure you vote." He said, "No, no, I'm voting for the Mondale for our ticket. But I really wish you would vote." He was a Democrat who thought Reagan was terrific. And that's what it was throughout the country. It wasn't that women voted against me. They voted for Ronald Reagan. And they voted on the issues. Women were looking at the issues, not the issues that we were talking about so much, but they thought that things were going pretty well. I mean, you remember everybody was walking around this Morning in America and all the rest of that stuff. And people were actually believing it.
All right, well, let me put this to you, because Carol Moseley Braun, who was on this series with us, told us that one of the hardest things for women in office to do is to balance their language to be able to act and talk tough, but not to seem too tough. How did you manage that?
Well, you know, I had a little bit of an edge because I was the prosecutor before I got elected to Congress. And when I ran the first time I was running for office, I had my posters read, "Finally a tough Democrat," which really kind of rattled the Democratic organization in the Queens County when they saw what I had done. But, you know, I had a tough primary and I won it. Plus, when it comes, push comes to shove on some of this stuff, I don't know if it's necessarily showing that you're tough on things unless you're talking about, you know, in 1984, can she push the button, you know, that, because we were in the middle of a Cold War with Russia. I don't think that's the issue. I think women have to show that they can be leaders. And I had shown that throughout my career, both as a prosecutor and as a member of Congress. But I think the other piece of it is a lot has changed. You know, Carol is a good friend. And it was different for her in the Senate because she was one of so few women there. Now I think it's even more different. I think seeing Hillary coming out there, nobody is questioning whether or not she's tough enough on anything. She's able to look at what she's done, talk about her votes, talk about the future, come up with solutions on issues that are issues that, you know, maybe 50 years ago women didn't talk about, but women do today. So I'm not quite sure that it's necessary to be tough or to have, you know, different ways of approaching things or talking about things.
Well, polls are showing that Americans are ready and willing to elect a woman president, suggesting that gender alone may no longer be the stumbling block as it has been in the past. But it is not clear from these polls what type of women they would elect. What type of woman do you think, Ms. Ferraro, Americans would want as their president?
You see, I have real problems with the generics. For instance, if you were to say to the American public, what type of man in 2000 would you want to as your president? I bet if you had asked them to list a bunch of characteristics, none of them would have been the characteristics that George W. Bush had, which eventually led him to the White House. Gender is not the defining issue. What I'm saying is it should not be the disqualifying characteristic, no more than race should be, or religion should be, or the fact that somebody's been, you know, married and divorced 3 times should be. What you have to do is look at the individual and say, this individual is running for office, and this is where they stand on the issues. This is the type of leader they are. This is whether or not they're competent, they have integrity. I'm going to go down the line. But that applies to male, female, black, white, Roman Catholic, Jew, Mormon.
Absolutely. But you use the word should, Ms. Ferraro, and I'm wondering, there is a difference, is there not, between what should be and what is?
Yeah, but I do think it's up to us to educate the public. Because when we ask these questions, are you ready to elect a woman? Are you ready to elect a black? What do we think, voters in this country are stupid? You know, there are people, women being elected throughout the world. Like Ellen Johnson Sirleaf in Liberia last year. I mean, you can go throughout the, we have a woman running for president of France right now.
That's true.
We have a woman chancellor of Germany. I mean, it's, you can go on and on and on as to where women have been elected, will be elected. Are Americans stupid that we can't recognize leadership because of gender or race? We just don't have to talk about those things as stumbling blocks. We've got to just, in my view, stop using them as a disqualifying characteristic and let people run who are talented and able to make the race and do the job.
Well,
and that's who I'm going to vote for. I mean, that's how I vote.
All right. Well, legislatively speaking, then, let's move to that arena. How do the issues that are important to women, let's say, influence and even constrict, perhaps, the agenda you have to pursue as a female in office, if you believe that is true?
Well, I don't. And for one thing, when I got elected to office, when I was elected to Congress, I represented my entire district. I didn't only represent women. I represented men. I represented the elderly. I represent a lot of Republicans and conservatives as well as Democrats. So I did not, you know, feel that I had to only look at what was important to women. I have to tell you two things. One is that if you were to say to women today, what is the most pressing issue on your mind? They're going to tell you the Iraq War.
Same
they're
as men.
Without doubt. Yeah. You know, and the next one, health care, education, those are women's issues. In 1979, I guess it was, Bella Abzug was at the White House. She was with this women's commission that President Carter had set up, and he wanted her to address women's issues. And she said, every issue is a woman's issue, Mr. President. Let's talk about the economy. Let's talk about the environment. Well, he fired her from the group. But, you know, she was absolutely right.
Here's a discernible difference from what the research seems to show, and that is that women are as likely as men to get elected when they do run in state or congressional races, but women are less likely to run. Should they be recruited more? Do you agree or disagree with that position, that women are not running as much as they could and should?
That was more an issue when I was running for Congress. I mean, the county organization would go out and talk to the white guys. I went around. I was, you know, as I said to you, I was a prosecutor. I came out and I went around looking, trying to get some help from the county organization. And they tell me, no. And so what I did was I ran against the county organization, which is why I came out with that poster, Finally a Tough Democrat, after I won the primary. But the thing about it is they did not reach out to women. And outreach now is really, it's being done very frequently. The problem that women have, most legislatures do not have term limits. And so the people incumbents get reelected and reelected and reelected. Most of the incumbents are men. So if you're running against a white male who's been in that position, you know, for 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, whatever, 10 years, 20 years, has incredible amount of money and incredible amount of power, you know, the odds of you beating him are not very good. But what we also find is that where there's an open seat, when women run, they really do extremely well. I mean, look at the number of women in the Senate that has increased over the last, you know, well, since 1992. In 1984, there was one woman in the United States Senate. That was Nancy Kassenbaum. One. You know, so look at that, the numbers of women. So we are electing women. They are running. They are putting themselves forward. They haven't put themselves forward for president yet. Liddy Dole did it in 2000.
Carol
Mosley Braun did it in 2004. But, you know, Liddy pulled herself out right away as soon as George Bush got in and preempted all the money and preempted all the support throughout the country from legislators and others. You know, Carol hung in there, but, you know, she couldn't raise the money for this thing. Mm. She wasn't in the minds of others, you know, the candidate that they wanted. I don't think it had to do with her race or her gender.
Well, here's my final question for you, and I really do thank you for giving us time. As you look back at your race in 1984, do you or do you not see that as a very important moment because you were a female on the ticket for the highest offices in the country?
I see it, yes. From 23 years, I can look back and say that really was an important thing to have happen because, you know, people did see a woman running for national office. But I also have to say something to you. It wasn't only the campaign. It wasn't only the election. Since then, I have to tell you the number of women who have come up to me and said to me, thank you for doing that. And when I say, well, I appreciate it, they say, well, no, you don't understand. Because if you hadn't done it, I would not have. And I cannot tell you the number of things they attach to the end of that word have. They've run for office, gone back to school. They've taken control of their life. One woman told me she got a divorce. I said, oh, I don't want to take credit for that one. But, you know, it's amazing how many people have said it made a difference in my life. It made me feel different. It made me understand. One state senator from Michigan said to me, she was sitting there, and she said, all of a sudden, I realized I was worth something. I sure would have loved for us to have won. I would have loved to have served 8 years, and I would have run for president in 1992. And then this conversation would not have taken place. So
we'll be calling you Madam President.
That's it.
Congresswoman Ferraro, thank you very much. It was a very enlightening conversation, and I appreciate your giving us some time.
Well, I totally enjoyed it. Thank you, Tony.
Right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Again, that was former Democratic vice presidential nominee Geraldine Ferraro speaking with NPR's Tony Cox. Now, we've posted several online-only audio clips at our website where you can hear Ferraro talk about getting the call to run for VP. That's at npr.org. And don't forget, our full show is now available every day as a podcast. Just ahead, Charles Drew Medical School takes Los Angeles to court, and Hillary versus Obama. Will tensions keep both of them out of the White House? We tackle the issue on Political Corner.